Piladeva finished his instructions. We heard the end of his instructions yesterday, where he compared the achievements and the process of bhakti yoga. He compared that with jnana yoga, and he compared it different varieties of fruitive activities that was done previously, and also with yoga. And the conclusion is that everything that can be achieved by other processes is achieved by bhakti. And bhakti delivers, or it allows one to attain something, a realization that is unachievable through any other means. And that unachievable realization is realization of Bhagavan. Bhagavan means the one who possesses everything that attracts us, all opulences. Bhaga means fortune, and Avan means the possessor. So that which makes Krishna the most fortunate, all-attractive personality of Godhead, that is those qualities are called Bhaga. And because he possesses that, he is called Bhagavan. And to awaken our relationship with him, personal relationship with him, especially in Golok Vrindavan, can only be achieved by bhakti. And of course, to go to Krishna Loka, to Goloka Vrindavan, one needs a special flavor in his bhakti. To love Krishna, not only in a personal way, not only with bhakti, with great devotional service, but to love him just as the residents of Vrindavan love him. In that mood, in that same mood. Ramya kachit tupassana vrajavadu vagena vakalpita. That is the most pleasing type of worship to Krishna. So to enter into that realm, one needs the highest, most refined kind of bhakti as well. The most refined devotional service. So everything that can be achieved through jnana and yoga is achieved through bhakti, and that which can be achieved through bhakti cannot be achieved in any other way. And not only that, but in order for jnana and yoga, or even karma, to give their results, there must be some bhakti there. So therefore, Kapila Muni has finished describing bhakti and its relationship with other processes for the purpose of glorifying bhakti, because he wants his mother to understand that she should practice devotional service, focusing her mind fully upon him. And serve him with great devotion. He wants his mother to do that. So therefore he has compared, because he has previously described these different paths. He's described yoga, he's described jnana, he's described the composite fundamental principles of the universe. But yet, although he's described these things, he doesn't want his mother ultimately to independently try to attain them or practice them. He wants his mother just to attain bhakti. So therefore, after completing his instructions, which took many, many chapters, he's going to finish off this chapter by explaining who is qualified to receive these instructions and who is not. And then finally he'll summarize what he wants his mother to do in the last verse. So first he's going to describe who these instructions are not meant for. Why are they not meant for these people? Because if people have these particular qualities, they will not be able to properly understand what the instructions that they are given, because we don't exactly hear, we don't understand exactly what we hear unless our consciousness is directly connected to the consciousness of the speaker. Because this happens all the time. Someone will say something and there's a misunderstanding. But when there's a heart-to-heart relationship between two individuals, their communication is excellent. Exactly, there's no disparity between what the person is trying to communicate and what the person understands. So when a qualified person is speaking, such as we hear in Kapila Muni, speak through the purports of Srila Prabhupada, if one is full of bad qualities or inappropriate qualities, his heart, his consciousness cannot be contiguous. It cannot be one or connecting or adjoining the consciousness of Kapila Muni. So therefore, he will misunderstand. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says, Sajjatiya ashate snigda, that one should hear the Bhagavatam from someone who is advanced, sadhu sangha svato vare, that one should hear the Bhagavatam from someone who is advanced, who one is sajjatiya, of the same family, of the same mood as, because if one is in a different mood, one will not understand. So here are the disqualifications for hearing this that will put one in a different consciousness that will disenable one from understanding. So Kapila Dev continued, this instruction is not meant, or those who have these qualities should not hear it, for the envious, for the agnostics. Agnostics, we know what envious are, the envious are, but agnostics are those who say that God cannot be known and no one can say anything to describe him, because he's beyond, so no one can describe him. So one cannot say if he exists or if he doesn't exist. That's called agnostic. So if a person thinks that you cannot describe God, how will he be able to understand when God is describing himself? Because they know you can't describe yourself. Well, if Kapila Dev, who is the Lord, wants to tell about himself, who can stop him? Certainly not an agnostic by saying that God cannot be described. So neither the envious nor the agnostics, nor persons who are unclean in their behavior, nor is it for hypocrites or for persons who are proud of material possessions. It is not to be instructed to persons who are too greedy and too attached to family life, passion, ignorance like this, nor to persons who are non-devotees, nabhaktaya, not devotees, because non-devotees will say, no. What he really means is this, because Kapila Muni is saying that we should ultimately give our heart to Krishna, and a non-devotee will say, no. That's not what he means. He means the unborn, unmanifest within Krishna, or something ridiculous like that. Nor to persons who are non-devotees and who are envious of the devotees and the personality of Godhead. So in Prabhupada's purport to this 40th verse, he explains some of these qualities that have been explained. When a person is not contaminated by the above-mentioned faults, yet in the ultimate issue, even if he is pure in heart in one sense, but he's not interested in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or if he's a non-devotee, even if he's qualified in so many other ways, if he's not a devotee, he cannot understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And on the other hand, ultimately, if one is devotionally inclined, even if one has so many other disqualifications, those disqualifications will be removed by his devotional inclination and his engagement in the process. Now in text 41 and 42, it's going to say who can be instructed, who should be instructed. So these are the qualities that make the connection very strong between we who are hearing the Bhagavatam and Kapila Muni and the great Acharyas and Srila Prabhupada who is speaking the Bhagavatam. So we want, if we have the other qualities, we want to remove them. They are disqualifications, and these qualities will increase our ability to be affected and purified. So instruction should be given to the faithful devotees, shraddhadanaya bhaktaya, to a faithful devotee who is respectful to the spiritual master, who is non-envious, friendly to all kinds of living entities, and eager to render service with faith and sincerity. This instruction should be imparted by the spiritual master to a person who have taken the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be more dear than anything. What does that mean? Who have taken the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be more dear to them than anything. Why is that such a qualification? Because in this world, so many things we are attached to. We place value upon them. And when one places value upon something in the material world, it's only natural. One wants those, one will give up other things to keep those things that are dear to him. Because in this world, we can't have everything. Our hands can only hold so much, our life can only do so much, we can only do so many things in our life. So if one is fully attached to family even, in a selfish way, or to attaining wealth, or attaining fame or power, then one will not be able to give everything to Krishna, give his full heart, because his heart is given to so many other things. But on the other hand, when the Lord, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is more dear to them than anything else, then they will very easily be able to give up and sacrifice minor things to achieve him. Nothing will be competitive to Krishna and for the attachment in his heart. Who are not envious of anyone, another qualification, non-envy. And on the other hand, envy is a disqualification, because envy is always, ultimately, if we are envious of or jealous of someone, it's ultimately that we are envious of Krishna. Say if we see someone who is very beautiful or very popular or plays musical instruments very well, or is this or that or wealthy or does anything. And if we are jealous of that person, envious of that person, just imagine how envious we would be if we were confronted with Krishna. Because Krishna is the most beautiful. He plays instruments better than anyone. His flute is so attractive that when birds hear it, they fall from the sky. As they flap their wings, they forget to flap. They become so enwrapped in hearing the sweet sound of the flute. And he's so beautiful, and everyone loves him best. So if we're envious of someone else, just imagine how envious, how deep the envy of Krishna sits in our heart. So really, we have to become unenvious. Nirmatsaram satam. Who are perfectly cleansed and who have developed detachment for that which is outside the purview of Krishna consciousness. So again, in Prabhupada describes much of this in detail in the purports. He explains. Not only is he detached, he says, to the words, bahir jatavaragaya means a person who has not developed, who has developed detachment from external and internal material propensities. Not only is he detached from activities which are not connected to Krishna consciousness, But he should be internally averse to the material way of life. He doesn't want. He has concluded, he has decided that he does not want to enjoy material life. That is not the purpose of his life, to try to make some home here and arrange the material energy in such a way that he can become happy here. So a person who has made this determination that no, I will not become happy in this material world, I want to go to Krishna and become happy there. A person who has made that determination in his mind, he, in the words of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, has made the greatest step in going back to Godhead. Because if someone, if within one's heart, if one is thinking something in this world will give me the satisfaction I'm looking for, we'll always be seeking that, and we will never be able to give ourselves fully to Krishna or his service. Such a person who is averse to the material way of life and has these other qualities, such a person must be non-envious and should think of the welfare of all living entities. When one is envious, one wishes harm for others. When one is envious of them, we are not their well-wisher. We don't wish them to prosper. We want harm to come to them. So if one is non-envious, one should think of the welfare of all living entities, not only of human beings, but living entities other than human beings. The word shuchaye means one who is cleansed both externally and internally. To become actually cleansed externally and internally, one should chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna or Vishnu, constantly. Constantly. And then in the final verse in this chapter, Yaidam Srinuyadamba Shraddhaya Purusha Sakrit Yo Vabhidyate Machita So Yati Padavim Chame. Anyone who once meditates upon me with faith and affection, who hears and chants about me, surely goes back home, back to Godhead. He attains, Kapila Muni explains, he attains my abode. If one meditates upon Krishna with faith, with affection, and hears and chants about him, that's his taste. That's what he wants out of life. That's what he appreciates. That's what gives him pleasure. So such a person, and this in one sense is the summary of what Kapila Muni is telling his mother, to think, meditate upon him. And for his mother, because his mother loves him so naturally, as a mother loves her son, because Kapila Muni is the son of Devahuti, is known as Devahuti Putra. Kapila Devahuti Putra. So because he is the son of Devahuti, and naturally she loves him so much, naturally she will meditate upon him with so much faith and so much affection. And she will love to hear and chant about him. And she will therefore go back to home, back to God. And anyone who develops a loving and affectionate mood for Krishna will naturally meditate upon him, naturally hear and chant about him, and naturally go back home, back to Godhead. Naiti mameti, so Arjuna, not take birth again in this material world. So in one sense, that is the conclusion of Kapila Dev's teachings, that we must focus our mind fully upon Krishna with great affection and great attention. Should learn to love Krishna through the process of bhakti. So then, after Kapila Muni completed his instructions to Devahuti, hearing this, understood the truth about devotional service, how devotional service was both the means and the end. The goal, the sadhya, kriti sadhya bhavetsa sadhana devi nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakattam vidhi sadhyata. The sadhana, or the practice, is devotional service, and the sadhya, or the goal, is bhava, or love, or pure devotion. So when she understood this, she became all completely free from ignorance, because she understood the actual position of devotional service and transcendental knowledge. And therefore she offered her obeisances to the Lord, the author of the basic principles of the Sankhya system of philosophy, which is the background of liberation, and she satisfied Kapila Muni with the following verses of prayers. So here, from text 2 to 8, 2 to 8, or, yes, 2 to 8, Devahuti is going to explain her realizations after hearing this. Remember, she has heard for chapters and chapters and chapters Kapila Muni's instructions, and now she is going to thank him, express her appreciation with obeisances, and thereby explain exactly what it is that she has heard or what she has understood. So in these seven prayers or seven slokas, she is going to do that. So we listen very carefully and we'll understand what the conclusions of Devahuti were after hearing this. So the first verse, text 2. Devahuti said, we'll read 2, 3, and 4 together, and then we'll read some of the purports. Devahuti said, Brahma is said to be unborn because he takes his birth from the lotus flower which grows from your abdomen while you lie in the ocean at the bottom of the universe. But even Brahma simply meditated upon you, whose body is the source of unlimited universes. My dear Lord, So many points in that, and we'll discuss them. My dear Lord, although personally you have nothing to do, you have distributed your energies in the interactions of the material modes of nature. And for that reason, the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation take place. My dear Lord, you are self-determined and are the Supreme Personality of Godhead for all living entities. For them you created the material manifestation, and although you are one, your diverse energies can act multifariously. This is inconceivable to us. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have taken birth from my abdomen. Oh my Lord, how is that possible for the Supreme One, who has in his belly all the cosmic manifestation? So that means that Devahuti too, because she's part of the cosmic manifestation, she is within the belly of Kapila Muni because he's the Lord, and yet Kapila Muni took his birth from her womb, her belly, her abdomen. So there is the Lord, and there is everything, and within that is Devahuti, but within Devahuti is the Lord, who is everything. And within that Lord, whose everything is Devahuti again, and within Devahuti is the Lord. So this is most astounding. Oh my Lord, how is that possible for the Supreme One who has in his belly all the cosmic manifestation? The answer is, it is possible. For at the end of the millennium, you lie down on a leaf of a banyan tree, and just like a small baby, you lick the toe of your own lotus feet. So this will be described, I think, in the 12th canto. Markandeya Rishi sees this. So, and then there are some more. Those are three of the seven. So we'll read some of the purports. So the first one said, which is the second verse, She said that Brahma is unborn. He is born from the lotus flower which grows from the Lord's abdomen while you lie in the ocean at the bottom of the universe. But even Brahma, he simply meditates upon you, who is the body, whose body is the source of unlimited universes. So Brahma is so powerful. He's so powerful. But Krishna is the source of that Brahma. So therefore Krishna is the power behind Brahma's power. So how powerful Krishna is, no one can estimate. So this is the first thing that she's establishing. And that his body is the source of so many universes. So Prabhupada explains in his purport. The nature of the Lord's gigantic body is also explained in this verse. That body is transcendental, untouched by matter. It is the source of matter. But it itself is beyond matter. Since the material manifestation came from his body therefore existed before the material creation. So his body is non-material. The conclusion is that the transcendental body of Vishnu is not made of material elements. So Kapila Muni is right there in a transcendental body. What does a transcendental body mean? We can say that it is not like the material bodies that we have and that we see. So it is nirgun. There is no mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. It is transcendental, it is beyond that. What is it made of? It is made out of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. What would it be like to have a body that's made out of eternal bliss? Krishna has that. So this is wonderful. And that body, Devahuti is seeing, sitting right before her in the form of Kapila Muni. The body of Vishnu is the source of all other living entities as well as material nature. So how powerful that body is. It is conscious. It's satchitananda. It is full of knowledge. It knows everything. It's the source of everything. And yet, he's sitting there right before her. Even the source of all the material energy. So therefore Devahuti said, you are the background of the material manifestation and all created energy. What does it mean when we say that something is the background of something else? Yeah, it rests on it. It's behind it. And very often, you know, just like if you look at one of the pictures here or anywhere, you see the figures in the forefront, but you don't really notice what's in the background. But yet, what's in the forefront is resting upon the background. So similarly, although we may not notice Krishna, we may notice those things produced through the material energy, it is Krishna that's resting upon, supporting it. Its existence depends upon Krishna. He is the background of everything. So you are the background of the material manifestation and all created energies. Therefore, you're delivering me from the clutches of Maya by explaining the system of Sankhya philosophy is not so astonishing, because you do so many astonishing things. Even the fact that you are sitting before me and your body is transcendental, that is more astonishing. Your being born from my abdomen is certainly wonderful. So that is still more astonishing, that although you are this person who is the background of all creation, that you are born of my abdomen, you are the source of creation, and you have kindly taken birth as my child. So this is not only wonderful, it is inconceivable. It is wonderful, but it is impossible for the material mind to understand. That is most wonderful, she says. Your body is the source of all the universe, and still you put your body within the abdomen of a common woman like me. To me, that is most astonishing. And then in the third text, she says, although you personally have nothing to do, you have distributed your energies in the interactions of the material modes of nature. So your energy, goodness, passion, ignorance, makes creation, maintenance, and the dissolution of the cosmic manifestation take place. So how powerful are you? Your energy. We can't even conceive of, what can we conceive? We can conceive of this temple building, or we can conceive of this city, or the country in which we're within, or maybe a little bit we can conceive of the planet, the entire planet. But the universe? Can we conceive of so many planets? Solar system, so many planets, hundreds, thousands of planets, thousands of millions and billions of miles away? Can we conceive of many universes? No. So all that, the creation, the maintenance, and the destruction of those are taking place by Krishna's energy, although he is doing nothing himself. His energy is doing that all. So Devahuti is astounded that this all-powerful, transcendental, inconceivably powerful person has taken his birth from my womb. My dear Lord, you are self-determined. You do as you like. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead for all living entities. And for them, for the living entities' benefit, you created this material manifestation. And although you are one, although there is one God who is the Supreme, he is called Asama Udha. No one is equal to him. No one is greater than him. And aham savasya prabhava, everything comes from him. Janmad yasya yataha. And although you are one, your diverse energies act multifariously. You're doing everything in its different ways. This is inconceivable to us. So because he's inconceivable, and no one is greater or equal to him, he cannot be known by our little brains. We cannot understand his plan, his ideas, why he has done this, why he allows this to happen. He's so unlimitedly powerful. And then in the fourth verse, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have taken birth from my abdomen. So this point we've explained some. How amazing this is, this all-powerful person. Oh my Lord, how is that possible for the Supreme One who has in his belly all the cosmic manifestation? The answer is that it is possible. For at the end of the millennium, you lie down on a leaf of a banyan tree, and just like a small baby, you lick the toe of your lotus foot. So this Lord, who is so inconceivably powerful, at the end of the manifestation, look what he does. He's sitting there like a baby on the leaf, and he's got his foot in his mouth, his toe in his mouth. Have you ever seen a baby put his toe in his mouth? Nitai, you have seen? You ever seen? Did you used to do that when you were a baby? I think so. Okay. I don't remember myself, but Prabhupada's purport. At the time of dissolution, the Lord sometimes appears as a small baby lying on a leaf of a banana. I keep saying banana tree. Maybe I'm hungry or something. Maybe I want to go to Mayapur. A banyan tree, floating on the devastating water. Therefore, Devahuti suggests, your lying down within the abdomen of a common woman like me is not so astonishing. You can lie down on the leaf of a banana banyan tree and float on the water of devastation as a small baby. It is not very wonderful, therefore, that you can lie down in the abdomen of my body. You teach us that those who are very fond of children within this material world and who therefore enter into marriage to enjoy family life with children can also have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their child. And the most wonderful thing is that the Lord himself licks his toe. This is wonderful, amazing, inconceivably wonderful, amazing. Prabhupada's purport continues. Since all great sages, because usually when people think about God, what do they think about? They think about some all-powerful fellow. He's created universes and he's throwing thunderbolts at some people, giving them all kinds of trouble, and letting money and auspiciousness rain down on others. The last thing someone thinks of is a little baby on a bunion leaf in the water with his toe in his mouth. But here Prabhupada gives an interesting explanation. Since all the great sages and devotees apply all energy and all activities in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there must be some transcendental pleasure in the toes of his lotus feet. The Lord licks his toe to taste the nectar of which the devotees always aspire. Sometimes the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself wonders how much transcendental pleasure is within himself. And in order to taste his own potency, he sometimes takes the position of tasting himself. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, but he appears as a devotee to taste the sweetness of the transcendental mellow in himself, which is tasted by Srimati Radharani, the greatest of all devotees. So that purport explains why Krishna puts his lotus toe in his lotus mouth, because he wants to taste that sweetness. And he comes because the devotees are also always aspiring to taste the sweetness. And if one glances at the lotus feet of Krishna with his toenails, his sparkling, effulgent toenails, then all one's distress is vanquished. So there is so much sweetness in that, that Krishna himself places his lotus foot in his toe in his lotus mouth. My dear Lord, she continues, you have assumed this body in order to diminish the sinful activity. So why does Krishna come? So he's so powerful and yet he comes to this world. Why? You have assumed this body in order to diminish the sinful activities of the fallen and to enrich their knowledge and devotion and liberation. Since these sinful people are dependent on your direction, by your own will you assume incarnations as a boar and as other forms. Similarly, you have appeared in order to distribute transcendental knowledge to your dependents. So Krishna comes, sambhavam yapma mayaya. He comes by his own internal energy or by his own mercy to paritranaya sadunam, to deliver the sadhus, vinashaya chaduskritam, to annihilate the miscreants, and to dharma sanstapanataya, to re-establish the principles of religion. Sambhavami, yuga yuga, he comes, he manifests himself again and again, yuga after yuga. Because we are stuck in ignorance, we are trapped with the spirit of trying to enjoy the material world, even though what we get is not enjoyment, but quite the opposite. We anticipate enjoyment and get suffering. So Krishna comes to give us knowledge, to wake us up. To wake up. He gives us the wake-up call. That no, you're looking the wrong way for your happiness. Look towards me. Now, he's giving transcendental knowledge. And how will we become purified so that we turn away from the material world and towards him? So the next two verses are very wonderful, very important, and they are very famous as well. And Prabhupada's purports to them are also very important. We won't have time to hear them all. Yanamadeya Shavananakirtanat Yat pravanad yat smaradad api kvajit svado pisadhyā savanāya kaupate kuta punaste bhagavanu darshanat Aho bhatasvā pachoto gariyan yaj jivagre vatate nammatubhyam te pustapaste Dhubu sasnoralya brahmanochur namaganantiyete. To say nothing of the spiritual advancement of persons who see the Supreme Person face to face. Krishna is so powerful, so wonderful, that even a person born in a family of dog eaters immediately becomes eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices if he once utters the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or chants about him, hears about his pastimes, or offers obeisances, or even remembers him. So the Lord is so powerful, or rather his names are so powerful, or hearing about him, or chanting about him, or offering obeisances, or remembering him is so powerful. So how powerful is he? So even someone born in the lowest of family becomes the most elevated person if he engages even once in these activities. And then the second of the verses, oh, how glorious are they whose tongues are chanting your holy name. Even if born in the families of dog eaters, such persons are worshipable. Persons who chant the holy name of your lordship must have executed all kinds of austerities and fire sacrifices and achieved all the good manners of the Aryans. To be chanting the holy name of your lordship, they must have bathed at holy places of pilgrimage, studied the Vedas, and fulfilled everything required. So the two verses, the first one explains that it purifies chanting, hearing, offering obeisances, or remembering, just once utters the holy name of the Lord. It's so powerful that even if one is in the lowest position, one immediately becomes elevated to the highest position. What to speak? So this is just by once chanting. What to speak of someone who is seeing you face to face, she's saying. And then in the second verse, that the people who chant your holy names, whose tongues are chanting holy names, regardless of their birth, they are worshipable. And it means that in previous times, they've performed all the preliminary activities that have brought them to this exalted position of chanting holy names. Now, Prabhupada, we'll read some of the purports to this. These two verses. Herein, the spiritual potency of chanting, hearing, or remembering the holy name of the Supreme Person, the Supreme Lord, is greatly stressed. So these are the realizations of Devahuti after hearing the whole philosophy. Rupa Goswami has discussed the sequence of sinful activities of the conditioned soul, and he has established in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu that those who engage in devotional service become freed from the reactions of all sinful activities. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord says that he takes charge of one who surrenders unto him, and he makes him immune to all reactions to sinful activities. If by chanting the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes so swiftly cleared of all reactions to sinful activities, then what is to be said of those persons who see him face to face? So this verse describes that a person who does this, performs these activities, even once, they can immediately, sadhya means immediately, sadhya savanaya, they can immediately perform the Vedic sacrifices. Because in India, those who follow even the remnants of the Varnashrama system, they do not acknowledge generally the potency of the holy name. And they say that those who are in the Brahmin families, they are the highest, born just by taking birth in a Brahmin family. But here, and that a person who is born in a lesser family, possibly in future lives, he can take his birth in a Brahmin family and then become liberated, but not in this life. So here, Kapila Muni is explaining, or Devahuti is explaining the opposite, that one, if one is purified by chanting Krishna's names, and Prabhupada will explain in the purports, quoting Srila Swami, that there's quality in the chanting, that one has to chant offenselessly. But immediately then, one can act. If one chants the holy name offenselessly, even once, one can immediately act on the platform of Brahman. Not in the future lives, but immediately, sadhya. One can immediately perform Vedic sacrifices. His qualification increases because his purification increases. So this is quite the controversy in India, even amongst Gaudiya Vaishnavas sometimes. So sometimes there's those who say that it was improper for those not born in Brahmin families to get the sacred thread and worship the deity and things like that. So this is a big, very big point, and Prabhupada attacks it very strongly in the purport. We'll just read one little part of it. But a person who chants the Lord's holy name of the Lord, even if born in a family of chandalas, dog eaters, does not need reformation. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna, he immediately becomes purified and becomes as good as the most learned brahmana. Sridhar Swami especially remarks in this connection, Anena pujatram lakshate. Some caste brahmanas remark that by chanting Hare Krishna, purification begins. Of course, that depends on the individual process of chanting. But this remark of Sridhar Swami's is completely applicable if one chants the holy name of the Lord without offense. He immediately becomes as respectable as the most learned brahmana and can be allowed to perform Vedic sacrifices. If simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord one becomes sanctified instantly, then what can be said of those persons who see the Supreme Lord face to face and who understand the descent of the Lord as Devahuti understands Kapila Dev? And then in the next verse that describes how one must have performed all the purificatory processes in order to be chanting the Lord's holy names. So as Prabhupada's purport explains this in detail too. But I'll just read a little bit from the last paragraph, which is just one sentence. There are many Vedic statements in different places saying that anyone who chants the holy name of the Lord becomes immediately freed from conditional life. And then anyone who hears the holy name of the Lord, even though born in a family of dog eaters, also becomes liberated from the clutches of material entanglement. And then Devahuti concludes with the final verse. So after describing how powerful the Lord is and how wonderful it is that he's appeared within her abdomen, then he describes the power of the Lord's name and the power of the Lord's service, because this is the point that she understands. If she is to become freed from all ignorance and to become liberated and to become spiritually situated after hearing the instructions of Kapila Dev, this is her understanding. How powerful is the devotional service of the Lord? This is her conclusion. And why is this true, that the Lord's service is so powerful? She explains in the final verse, I believe, my Lord, that you are Lord Vishnu himself under the name of Kapila. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Brahman, the greatest. The saints and sages, being freed from all the disturbances of the senses and mind, meditate upon you. For by your mercy only can one become free from the clutches of the three modes of material nature. At the time of dissolution, all the Vedas are sustained in you only. So she understood. She came to the conclusion, her summary, and instead of speaking so many prayers, she just simply concludes that she cannot possibly worship him. But yet, she prays that he be satisfied as the Supreme Lord by her prayers. She's accepting that he is the Supreme Lord. So Kapila Muni, I think he responds to her prayers in two slokas. himself. And we shall read those tomorrow and then hear the end of the chapter of Krishna Rasa. Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? So I find that when we hear the prayers, they often reveal, the prayers will reveal some things that are very important for us to assimilate ourselves. So Devahuti, after hearing so many chapters of philosophy and instructions, her prayers, what she actually understood, which will ultimately, as we'll hear in the remainder of the chapter, will give her freedom from the material world. They are so important, what she actually understood. And we just heard that. She understood the power of the Lord, how wonderful He is that He came. Even though He is the all-pervading, all-powerful master of all energies, of all universes, of creation, maintenance, of destruction, yet He comes as the beloved child of His devotee. And just by chanting His names or engaging in His service, one is so wonderfully and quickly purified, because He is the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, the Lord. Narayana Angam, actually, and Lord Vishnu and Lord Kapila Dev, they are just angams or parts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Narayanam tam niyasarvadehinam. So if we can become inspired after hearing the potency of Krishna's names, of Krishna's service, if we can become inspired and renewed in our desire to serve with devotion this all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we are very fortunate. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. So, continue tomorrow. Sri Kapila Muni ki jai, Devahuti Ma ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Krishna's holy names ki jai.